Five, four, three, two, one. What's up, guys? It's another episode of Trigger Warning with Travis Trimble. I'm here for part two of the Raul Alejandro Mendoza interview. How was that? Is it better this time?
That was really fucking good, bro. For someone who's never spoken a lick of Spanish in his life, that was actually really good. You know, you the R's, but that was actually pretty damn good, Travis. I'm gonna give you that one.
So we talked to him a couple days ago. I'm not sure. This will probably be a couple weeks before you hear this, but I don't know how it's gonna end up working out. But we've already talked about a number of things, but if you want to hear about that stuff, you're gonna have to go to part one. I'm not gonna give you a recap of it, because we still have too much to talk about.
Way too much.
So let's just start with your what you want to do with film. Just start right out with nitty gritty.
All right. So I've been studying media production, want to say 2 years already. Hold up. Yeah, 3 actually, because the first year was chemical engineering and chemistry, and then I switched over to media production. Been doing 3 years. I'm currently at the University of Houston, finishing up my degree. Should be almost done in like year and a half because I have basically all my film classes to finish up. Right now I'm kind of just doing the prereqs so that way I can get to doing all the cool stuff. But I've also directed a documentary called Bloodline. It's a documentary about my family, you know, where we're from and our heritage and stuff like that, especially result a bit especially like in that area where I live in, where it's like a border town and stuff. So, you know, I've directed that. I've written a couple of scripts that haven't been produced yet. That's not on really me. It's also the where I was trying to shoot them. People were flaky, and you know, it's I just knew that I was gonna have to bring those scripts over here to actually get them done. I'm keeping one though because I want to do that one with my co-director, which I have with me, over there back home. But yeah, film has always been something that I've loved, man. I guess I'm just gonna actually turn the table on you and ask you, Travis, what's your favorite movie of all time?
Oh, see, this is funny that you asked that because the ap episode I was just recording, we talked a lot about you actually because he has similar aspirations. But
Yeah.
we'll stay out of that because I already talked to him for almost 2 hours. I only talk about him now. But my favorite movie, this came up in that last episode. I have two. They're tied for first. Okay. Number one is Step Brothers. It's the funniest movie I've ever seen, in my
Yeah.
opinion.
You mean that like guacamole?
And then number two is Juice
Juice. I have
with
never seen
Tupac.
Juice.
It's a hood thriller. You should look it up.
Yeah.
Should watch it. It's a good one.
I'll look it up, So for y'all who don't know my taste, I've given y'all this list countless times on my Instagram, but I'm gonna give it to y'all again just because, well, I love Travis. My favorite movies of all time list. These are not, they're in order of numbers, but the only one that matters is the first one because that's really the one film I love over the others. The others are just put in order as the recently watched again. So because one is on top of the other doesn't mean that it's better. There's no specific order, just the first one being my favorite of all time. I ha On number 10, I have Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey. Number 9, Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of Water. Number 8
Wow.
is The Godfather. Number 7 is Spirited Away from Hayao Miyazaki. Number 6 is Interstellar, directed by Christopher Nolan. Number 5 is Her, directed by Spike Jones. Blade Runner is number 4, directed by Ridley Scott. Babel is number 3, directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu. And then number 2 is American History X, starring Edward Norton. And number 1 is my favorite movie of all time, came out in the year 2010, is Beautiful, directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu. These are 10 movies that I feel have shaped me for film and shaped me into the person I am at the moment. You can tell taste in that list. I love sci-fi. I love dramas that can really hit you at your core and really invoke countless emotions. And I love whether those dramas be animated or live action. And I also like stories that kind of are built outside of their own comfort zone that can really invoke emotions in presenting subject matter in a different way than it's supposed to be presented. Yeah, I guess that's my best explanation for that taste. Any one of them that you recognize?
I've seen Spirited Away. We were just talking about The Shape of Water on the last podcast, and he told me that I should check it out. And I actually have it written out on my list of things to watch.
Yeah, bro. No, you can watch it on there. I actually gave the code to one of my team members in the Nerdcore, or I'd give you the code. But that movie's beautiful. It's so well made.
Yeah.
It's very odd that a recent movie makes it into my top 10 list. So a movie that literally came out last year, making it into my list is like a very big achievement to me.
Yeah. So I got this. The reason he brought this up was we were talking about in my list of topics that we, as you know, you've been through this already. Like when I ask a guest to be on here, I ask them like, oh, is there any topics you want to avoid or any topics that you specifically want to go into? And then we build up a list of topics we can talk about. I mean, as we found out with this last episode with you, we didn't hit nearly any of the topics that we talked about. But one I put on there is film and movies. And so I made a joke about that. But then he said, do you think there's a difference between the two terms? And so I'm going to ask you, do you think there's a difference between movies and film?
No.
No? Okay.
Movies and film.
Yeah.
Film is just another word to describe movies. It's like saying, is there a difference between movies and flick? No, it's just another way to say movies. Mm-hmm. Film also means film stock, which is a different way to shoot movies and shoot photography. But if you tell me I'm studying film, if you ask me, what do you mean by that? I mean, I could just tell you I'm studying how to make movies, you know.
Right.
Film is movies are film, you know. It's there's nothing different. It's just different terms, that terminology for how people describe it.
Right. Okay.
Filmmaking is the wide term that is considered, whether you're a producer, editor, director, or costume design, whatever you do in the world of film, you're a filmmaker. So, you know, I'm a filmmaker, but my concentration is directing and cinematography. Though I don't do cinematography as much as I want to.
I was actually about to ask you what your focus was going to be on, but you answered my question before I asked.
So. Directing, dude. I've only directed myself with my documentary and then, you know, my subjects that I interviewed, but I love directing. I can only do what I feel is in my vision. And when you're a director, you really put yourself out there to make sure that everything comes out to be the way that you planned it to be. And then editing, you know, that's really where the final product is made. But up until then, the director is really the one who's shaping everything and making sure that people are giving their best to create the vision that is in their head. And that's the type of director that I see myself as. I make sure that everything is well made, but I also don't jeopardize, you know, the people who work with me to make sure that they're comfortable and making sure that they're 100% to be able to give me the right performance they need. I'm not like the old directors who would like scream at their cast and stuff like that. Like, nah, I think that's very disrespectful. I think that actually hurts the cast and director relationship more than anything.
Right, right. So, hold on 1 second. I'm trying to pull up my topics list.
Your question.
Okay, so I can see. So I'm trying to be a little bit more focused. Talk about whatever you want to talk about.
You want me to talk on Bloodline?
Sure.
Yeah. This is my documentary I made for my Mexican American Studies class. It is on on three aspects of my family, the past, the present, and the future. So we live in a border town in the Rio Grande Valley in Texas. It's right next to Matamoros, Tamaulipas, Mexico. So it's like about 10 to 15 minute drive to get there, to Mexico. And where we live, it was the first, we are the, I think the second, because there was a family that got there right before us, like I think months before that we settled in that area. It was the first people to settle in that area and make houses there. So we have really grown there, and as a family, we've learned that that is our place. And before making this documentary, I was inspired by something my grandfather told me one time. We were just sitting outside. It was like a family reunion, and you know, we were sitting outside and looking out into our property. And he told me that back then he wouldn't have imagined he would have had this, and to him, he is living like a king now. He has land. He has land. He's able to see his children grow up and raise their own children, and he's able to eat and drink and drink water and stuff like that. You know, it's something that he never imagined. He actually made it to the Rio Grande River with only 25 cents to his name. Slept on the side of the river and basically worked as a bus driver for a little bit before getting his job at the as a barber, where he learned to cut hair and stuff like that. But he traveled from Ojo Caliente, I believe Ojo Caliente, Mexico, and he made it to right there to the mouth of the Rio Grande River with only 25 cents in Mexican money to in pesos to his name. So
Wow.
my that's on my mom's side. My dad's side is very much they grew up in extreme poverty, but you know, now my dad really chased the American dream, and he's doing good. You know, he is he, but to him, you know, the whole basis of what he's doing now, you know, he's happy where he is. He's seen his children grow up, and he was able to give us the life that he wasn't able to have when he was young.
That's what we all hope for, right? I mean,
Yeah.
be
Yeah.
better than we were.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so then, my grandfather, he didn't want to be recorded, so I just had to, you know, take down like in writing, and I had to do voiceover for that. But he just said that that whether it was him or others, you know, he wishes that all Latinos could see that we're all a family, and that was the biggest thing that was important to him. It was family and making sure that, you know, that he'd be able to live on and see really what became of what he started here. And so then I interviewed my aunt, who was one of the my aunt is the second oldest, I believe. I believe he, actually third oldest. Her and my grandmother, along with my grandfather and all my other aunts and uncle, they would go to Michigan and pick cherry after school, because you know you had to work. Because if it was just them, they weren't gonna have enough money to be able to eat, so they had to work with them in the fields, and they would pick cherry. And just imagine, like, you know, three or four fucking kids going out after school, going to the cold, either, I think it was actually, you know, after school or when it wasn't school, they would wake up like around 5 in the morning, go and pick cherry up in the cold, in Michigan, or in the blazing hot sun in Michigan as well, and just do that to make sure that they can provide money for the house. And she said that it was very much something that helped her grow and realize that, you know, I don't want this life for my child. So she really groomed her child to become the successful woman that she is. And now she's an engineer, and she's able to, she wants, and she was able to really make that for her own children. I want to say that it was up to my, she was the last one to go to start to do that, because after that, my other aunts, they moved back to Matamoros and then back to Brownsville, and they lived there, but her, my two uncles and my other aunt, they were the ones who did most of going over there to Michigan to pick the cherries. Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, we worked in the fields, man. Everybody always brings up the idea, that, oh, these are mostly the jobs that nobody else wants to do, and these were jobs that Latinos were doing at the time, and we still do them now. We go out and to the fields and we pick the grapes and cherries and whatnot, and under those blistering hot sun and or the really extreme cold. And it wasn't seen as bad back then for kids to go and do that, but she sees now, like, the what's it called, the whole consensus on that has changed a lot, especially with child labor laws and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, you would definitely not see kids out there picking today. I mean, you do, but
Yeah, but
not to
it's
the same extent.
yeah, it's rare now.
Yeah.
I mean, I've really grown an appreciation for my family because of that, and really hurts her my so I kind of compare and contrasted, her being the present and my little brother being the future. He's the product of years and years of generations of hardworking immigrant parents and immigrant relatives that we're here, and now he has this dream of becoming a very acclaimed actor, and he wants to make movies as well, and he wants to be on Broadway, and he knows that, with all that he was taught from from our parents and from our family, that that's really what built him to be this very inspired young Latino chasing a dream that we don't see much Latinos in on screen these days, and he's trying to chase a dream like that. So yeah, I you can watch that on YouTube, actually. Just look it up, Bloodline, a documentary about my family. It's on my YouTube channel. It's literally just called Raul Alejandro Mendoza, my channel. So just go and check that out. I it's not a year old yet, but it's something that I'm very proud of, and it's a very intimate work of mine. I think I've shown it to everybody in that chat. But if I've gone out of my way to personally show you this documentary, it means that you are actually a very special person in my life, because I am allowing you to go deep. I'm allowing you to explore this very intimate part of my life, and it's my identity and the basis of my inspiration to make something of myself every day.
I was one of the
Yeah.
first people he sent it to. Just putting that out there.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So that's a documentary. I really like it. I'm working on something at the moment that I want. I'm thinking about doing another documentary. I really want to do this crime thriller I wrote, but I would need my co-director here with me, so I'm thinking I'm gonna have to wait to go back home for that. I also have a film that I wrote called Mania. It's about a man who loses himself and creates another world in which things are perfect and haven't gone wrong. He doesn't lose his wife there, and he doesn't his brother didn't kill himself, and it's a really well thought out film that I've written out. And then I have another script called Acceptance, but that one is never going to get made. That one will never be made.
Why?
That is the first script I've ever written. And it's just a reminder of where I started and where, and it would need a lot of rewrites to make it better. But I just keep it as a milestone to remind myself, like, this is where you started, and hopefully everything after this is better, because it's a pretty bad script.
Speaking of scripts and pretty bad, it's not bad. I'm not going to trash us like that. The guy that I just did that episode with, Raul, was the guy who wrote Priscilla with me.
Still with me.
Priscilla is the name of the script. With me is me, as in who I am.
Damn,
We wrote it together. That
you guys
script I
wrote
sent
it?
you?
Oh, yes. Oh,
Yeah.
okay.
And
Yeah.
we're going back to it now and like editing it and lengthening it and
Yeah. I'm not gonna trash it. Like I told you, I just screenplay is not as easy as
Oh, for
everybody
sure.
makes it. Not at all. Especially dialogue, because I could write how I picture the shot any day of my life. That is the easiest thing that comes to me, because I'm very creative in that sense, and I can I've been around cameras so much that I've come to be able to see how I want my shot to be look like. But dialogue is another mile. Like, that's another way to go. And it's sometimes you're reading it and you think that, oh, it's this sounds fluid. And then once you really take another look at it, and you're like, wow, this doesn't even look like anything anybody would ever say at all. So I guess
Right.
if I some advice to people on dialogue is that read it, write it first, then read it. Read it again, and then read it again. If you don't see a change after, if it's still the same way in your head that you think that, oh, this sounds actually right, that somebody might actually say that, you're being wrong. You're wrong. You're gonna have to rewrite it again. And then if it sounds a little bit clearer, and you're say, and then you'd like take a look back at what you wrote before, and you see some inconsistencies that you've improved on, then you're probably going on the right track. You're going on the right track. So I 100% understand how hard it is to write dialogue. So I'm hope to your friend that wrote that script can go back and rewrite it, because it's an actually good it's an actually good it's an actual good piece of art, but it's just dialogue is just it's pretty hard to write.
Right. I agree. I was gonna say something else and I don't remember. So I got a little fun game for us to play for a second. Talk to me about, since we're both huge wrestling fans, huge MMA fans, give me five fighters you would trade to the WWE in exchange for five WWE wrestlers.
Wow.
Now, Ronda Rousey,
Is
Matt
that
Riddle, and Brock Lesnar are off the table.
Oh, God dang it. Okay. All right. So I would have to choose five fighters from the UFC. Can I any year? You know, it doesn't matter what
That's
time,
fine.
what.
That's fine. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I would choose wow, this is a lot harder than I thought. Cain Velasquez, just because you know he's the GOAT, and I would love to see what he would do in WWE. I send him GSP. What's the name of the other Silva?
Oh, the other
Not Anderson.
Silva.
Not Anderson Silva, but the other one. Damn it.
What weight class?
I think he was light heavyweight, to be honest. I
Oh,
cannot remember.
Vanderlei.
Wanderlei Silva. Chuck Liddell in his prime.
Okay.
And did I say BJ Penn already? Yeah, I should say BJ Penn.
So you said you've
Say
got
Kane.
BJ Penn, Vanderlei Silva, GSP, and Chuck Liddell, right?
And Kane.
And Kane, so that's five.
That's five? Okay, cool. I'd make a high roller esque type of very successful money makers type of stable with them, and they invade the WWE with, and I would send Batista during 29 to 2010 to the UFC. Shinsuke at the moment right now can't go. Shinsuke did do MMA at one point in his career,
Yeah.
so I think that's disqualified. Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne. I would really like to see what those people do and those two do in a MMA in an octagon after proper training and everything. So them two, Batista 29 to 2010. Damn it. Mark Henry in the early 2000s,
Okay.
maybe. Yeah. And then my last one, I would send. Damn it. This one's actually gonna make John pretty happy, because I know he's a really big fan of her. Dana Brooke with the actual good training in UFC and knowing her build and everything, I think I could see her taking on a couple of fighters.
I feel it. Mine would be the Diaz brothers, both of them. Conor McGregor.
Mm-hmm.
Chael Sonnen. And Cain Velasquez. I think that's who I'd send over there. What'd you say?
That's actually a really good list.
Yeah, I feel like everybody except for Cain in that group can really talk. You know what I mean? Cain's not about talking, but he can be a silent killer. You know what I mean? I mean, he can talk, but he's not known for his talking. So going to the UFC, let's see. Kurt Angle, for sure. Like, all these guys in their prime, okay? Their athletic prime. Kurt Angle.
Kurt would be, that would be really interesting in his prime.
Yeah. Dolph Ziggler.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Blackman.
Ooh.
Yeah, you remember Steve Blackman? Shit. I had some people and I thought I had it all deemed up. Now I'm not thinking so clearly. So yeah, those three. Probably Chad Gable.
Chad Gable? Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm trying to think of who else would be good.
I would say I think you could add what's his name? Damn it. You know what? I think you could add Seth Rollins with the proper training there.
Oh, I agree. I agree with that. I'm actually going to go with Charlotte, though.
Charlotte?
I think Charlotte is a freak athlete.
Yeah.
Well, she is the freak nature, man. Charlotte is really... I think Charlotte is the biggest acquisition when it comes to women's wrestling that we've had since the Lita and Trish Stratus days of, you know, women that were sadly given characters that were very sexualized, but... They had the in-ring talent to back it up.
I agree with that. In my opinion, Charlotte's the greatest female wrestler of all time. So
yeah, 100%. I agree with that too.
I think she could be a great fighter too if she started early enough and trained and all, you know what I mean, so on and so forth. So yeah, that's my five. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like a good list, dude. I think it's a lot better than mine.
So, you want to talk about wrestling? You want to talk about music? What do you want to talk about?
I guess we can keep on going with the... I wore my Bullet Club shirt today.
Oh, yeah?
A lot of people noticed it, and they were like, oh, yeah, I don't watch too much New Japan, but I know what it is. And one of them was like, did you buy that shirt at Hot Topic? I'm like... Yeah, because my other one that I got from New Japan, I mean, from the Pro Wrestling Tees store back in like 2013 when Bullet Club was at the pop, you know, with AJ as the leader and everything.
Right.
That shirt actually, I'm sorry, 2015. That shirt kind of shrunk a little bit and now it fits too tight around the belly. So, man, I love professional wrestling. It's always been something I enjoyed ever since I was a kid. I took a little break in between 2010 to 2014. 2015, early 2015. Took a little break, but when I came back, I felt actually even more interested in it than I did back then.
What brought you back?
Undertaker versus CM Punk. And WrestleMania 29.
It's funny because it, as much as people want to hate on him,
that was the
CM Punk has brought so many people back to wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really Punk. I'm not gonna say Taker. I just thought that the feud was written so well with Punk disrespecting Paul Bearer's memory and his ashes and all like that. You know, it was a good feud. It was really well written. I can't say that it was 100% Punk. I think it was more 75% Taker, 25% Punk.
I feel it. Okay.
That match is really, really, really good.
I agree. You're not a Punk fan, are you?
I'm like meh about Punk. I really don't care about him, but I'm not Mike who like just doesn't like him. Like we'll constantly say fuck Punk and stuff.
Fuck Punk.
You know,
fuck
I
Punk.
I could really, I if you don't mention him, I won't get meh. But if you're happy to talk about pro wrestling, I would never bring him up because I just don't give a crap about the guy.
I feel it. I feel that for sure.
Yeah.
CM Punk is my second favorite wrestler of all time, but
yeah. My favorite's The Undertaker, man.
That's ever your
since
favorite?
I was a kid. You know what? Not really. Hold up. No, my favorite wrestler of all time is Shinsuke Nakamura. I die hard Nakamura fan. Love him. Taker after and then Trips is number three.
So your favorite and my favorite are about to go at it. At a super show.
Yeah. Trips and Taker can go at it whenever they want, man. I think that's a great match. No matter what year you have it at, it's gonna be a great match.
I definitely feel that. So what are your thoughts on this? With the Evolution pay-per-view coming up and then there being a Saudi Arabian pay-per-view 6 days later.
Yeah, so I gave you my thoughts on an Evolution, but I guess I'll recap that. I have
no, more so on the fact that Saudi Arabian pay-per-view 6 days later, it's going to be an all-men's pay-per-view.
God, you know, that's really where Vince's eye for money really starts to show. You know, we know that Saudi Arabia is trying to become more progressive as of now, as of late. You know, I think they allowed women to finally start driving now. Now, I believe that they're able to get driver's license and stuff. But,
yeah, yeah.
You know, still things aren't as we're used to them, as we're used to in the United States, you know. I think that it's really cash grab, you know, for Vince. He's a market in Saudi Arabia that will make him money. But sadly, that market doesn't appreciate women's wrestling yet. And him making a pay-per-view the day before, I mean, 6 days before Saudi Arabia is genius, first of all, because that's an untapped market that I don't think UFC has ever even made an all women's UFC card. You know,
no, like they haven't.
They've never done that. TNA's never done that. No sport has ever, no combat sport has ever done a 100% all female event. And I think that is amazing. I think Vince knows that's amazing. I think Vince understands that the future really is in women right now and that's something that will bring them eyes and money. But he also knows that there's other markets out there that don't cater to women at the moment. And it is scummy. I will say that, you know, to say you support women, all this and like that, and how you show it in your product that you are really for the advancement of women's wrestling. But 6 days later, you make a event in Saudi Arabia that is a country notoriously known for the oppression of women. But if we have an Evolution 2 next year, I think that'd be great. But hopefully in years, we also integration into the Saudi Arabia market for women's wrestling.
Can you say that one more time, the part? You said after Evolution 2, or if we have an Evolution 2, that's great, but then you start cutting out.
So if we have an Evolution 2, that would be great next year. You know, it'll show that Vince doesn't want to do this just one year. But it'd be also great to see some integration of women's wrestling in the Saudi Arabian market.
I agree. Do you think that there any part of the Women's revolution is just pandering.
Not really, man. I think this is the time and place for it to finally happen. I think that the world of sports, I mean, look at Serena Williams, man. The best, one of the best athletes right now in the moment, at the moment, in time right now. I think that just Vince knows that this sexualized feuds and characters, it wasn't gonna cut it for long. That people weren't gonna wanna just take this for granted. They weren't gonna take this anymore. And he knew that the women in the in that backstage locker rooms, that they could wrestle circles around the men. I think after the women's revolution, I think what we're gonna start seeing are women and men mixed matches, single matches, not tag team. I think we're gonna start seeing women competing for the WWE title or the Universal title.
Really?
Like next year or anything. I'm talking like 5 to 10 years down the line, man.
Wow, that's a very bold prediction.
Because they've done it before in the Indies, you know, they've had women versus men.
No, yeah, but
China won the Intercontinental title.
right. But do you think that's realistic? Do you think realistically, do you think Charlotte could be in a real fight? Could Charlotte beat Samoa Joe?
Well, not Samoa Joe, but then again, this is wrestling, man. You know,
I yeah, but yeah.
put it out there. Yeah, come on, man. Like people do flips off the top rope with their opponent standing on. I mean, sitting down on that. I mean, what's it called? God damn it! How do I say that? They're doing flips off the top rope with their opponent just sitting there for the last minute and a half. I mean, how realistic do you want it to get? I think that's the beauty of pro wrestling.
You know how I
I
feel
think that
about
every
flips.
Yeah, I know. I think that's I think it's so artistic that anything could happen in pro wrestling. I think that down the line, I can see Charlotte and Samoa Joe going at it. Because if that's your question, then I would say, how did Spike Dudley go up against Brock Lesnar? How realistic was that?
Unrealistic.
Or
That's why he lost.
how did realistically Daniel Bryan go up against, you know, Randy Orton and Batista?
That's not that unrealistic though. He weighs in at over 200 pounds. Yeah, he's short. It's just different.
I
Men and
mean,
women are built differently. Like they shouldn't really be fighting each other. Like in real life, they shouldn't fight each other.
No, I mean, like, no, nobody should fight each other in real life. If you're a woman and a man, that's not cool. But what's it called? In the sport that we're talking about, it is very much about how the characters are written and how the feud is set up. And I, like, you know, one of my friends, she was so into wrestling, and it was at a time where I wanted to become a professional wrestler. And I didn't realize the limitations of my disability. And I told her that one of the feuds that I wanted to do was with her, because I feel like her and I could really do the chemistry together and really take it up a notch, you know, with that, if with the proper training in the ring. I think that you'll get some criticism from the media for sure about having women and men basically fight each other in the ring, but I think it would be a big step towards the advancement of pro wrestling in general.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I don't agree with it, but that's why I'm a different human being. I'm sure some people here will agree with you. But yeah, let's just keep pushing. What's your one dream match? If you could see any match ever between any two people, what would it be?
It's been my dream match for a long time, because when you have dream matches over the years, you start to realize that some of these are already being done. You know, one of my dream matches was AJ Styles versus John Cena. That happened 3 times, and they were 3 wonderful times that they happened. What's it called? Undertaker versus Roman Reigns was one of mine for the longest of time, and it happened, and I was actually pleasantly satisfied with it. But the one match
Really?
that I don't know if this has happened yet, but has Nakamura faced Daniel Bryan in SmackDown yet?
On SmackDown, no.
No? Yeah. We had that rumor for the longest of time when Bryan had the Intercontinental title, and and Nakamura was Intercontinental Champion over there at NJPW. There was like, you know, the battle of the Intercontinental Champions, and you know, I've seen it. I see it, man. I think written well, it could be one of the best feuds of, you know, that I've seen. I want it more than anything I've ever wanted in my life, man. I want Nakamura and Daniel Bryan to go at it one on one in that ring. It would be fantastic, man. It's my dream match, other than, you know, Undertaker versus Undertaker versus John Cena, but not the way it happened at WrestleMania, you know?
Right.
Because that was not, I don't care what anybody says, that was not Undertaker versus John Cena. And the writing was so well, dude, going up until that time. It was written so well. And then for it to end like that, nah, man, let's just, like, press rewind. Let's go back. Let's do this again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I definitely want to see that match as well, in a proper setting.
What's your dream match, bro?
I have two. They could never happen, but Triple H versus Macho Man Randy Savage.
Oh man, yeah, no, that's not gonna happen, buddy.
Yeah, cause, yeah, obviously he's dead. R.I.P.
He's dead.
R.I.P. to the Macho Man.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. But
Macho Man and Randy Savage.
The other one is Triple H versus Ricky Steamboat. I'm not gonna get into too much of what I'd like to see from that because this is a future episode of Book It.
Yeah.
But just, I got some plans for those, especially that one.
Yeah, man, Triple H is one that I completely adore. You know, I love Triple H's career. I think Triple H is really, really one of the best of all time. I think you have John Cena, Undertaker, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and you have Triple H in there in contention to be named as the best of all time, at least in the WWE. I would like to see Triple H. I would have liked to see Triple H go at it with what's his name? Actually, you know what? I'd like to see Triple H hasn't gone at it with AJ, right?
No.
No. Yeah. What the fuck are we waiting for? Or Triple H versus Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode in his prime in TNA versus Triple H. Wow. That would have been a great match. But Triple H versus AJ Styles, I don't know what's taking them so long. That is a match in heaven.
Right. I remember somebody saying, remember when Triple H was the WWE champion this last time he faced Dolph Ziggler on Raw?
Oh, that's true.
People were complaining about that, and they said, why? It's just another Triple H versus Shawn Michaels match. We should be happy.
Wow. You know, man, Dolph is Dolph, and, you know, it's not that I don't like the guy. It's just I don't see anything to really love about him. But, you know, if he has a good showing like he had at Hell in a Cell, that tag team match is, wow, that was explosive, man. That was a great match. Dolph was awesome in that one. But I'm just not the biggest Dolph fan out there. I won't even call myself a fan.
Blasphemous.
Blasphemous. I'm sorry, man. I'll give him his credit when it's due, you know? When he shows the fuck up, he does.
He's one of the greatest wrestlers on the planet today.
No.
Yes, he is.
You're playing a dangerous game there, friendo.
And also, anything that's not WWE is indie. Putting it out there.
Oh, that one really knows how to rustle. That opinion knows how to rustle Jimmy's.
But, I mean, here's the reason I think that way. WWE has no competition. WWE's only competition right now is the UFC, which is doing something completely different.
Yeah. It's just that, it's because, you know, we don't live in Japan. We don't go to New Japan events. In Japan, so you know the people over there might just think that, oh, New Japan is actually the biggest company. You know, they might think that way because you know wrong. They don't get, okay, hold up, man. You don't know where I'm, they don't get WWE programming, or they don't get events all the time like we do here, you know. So I wouldn't say that New Japan is on the same level as WWE, but it's also not on the level as your local indie promotion, you know?
No, but there's varying degrees to indie, but there's only one global megastar.
Global Force Wrestling?
Because here's the thing. Let's just break it into wrestlers, okay? There's a lot of Kenny Omegas. There's only one John Cena.
I know there's only one John Cena, but I also can't say that there's a ton of Kenny Omegas because
Kenny Omega is the third version of Finn Balor. There's Finn Balor. There's AJ Styles. There's Kenny Omega. It's all the same thing. It's, you get up to a certain point, you get hyped as the best in the world, then you go to WWE, and then someone else gets hyped as the best in the world because you're signed to WWE.
AJ Styles. Because not everybody can have a great match as AJ Styles.
No, I'm not saying it. I'm not taking anything away from these guys. But no one's saying AJ Styles is the best in the world anymore because he's the WWE champion. It's Kenny Omega now.
I think we've known it. I don't think we even have to repeat it anymore. I think we know that AJ Styles is...
No, I'm saying there's people saying Kenny Omega is better than AJ Styles, which is incorrect.
Oh, well, wrong.
But like, people are, to say that like Japanese people might think that New Japan is the biggest company in the world, that's just wrong because it's factual information. It's not an opinion.
You also look at the way that these wrestlers are being paid, right? You know, AJ, with the time that he was in New Japan, he was one of the highest paid wrestlers. You know, he was making in yen, he was making the equivalent almost of what John Cena was making over here. You know?
Yeah.
I think you said that in an interview. Like, you know, I think I'm making like about 5 to 6 mil in yen over in US dollars and converted into yen over here.
That's crazy. But
yeah.
At the same time, I don't see anybody paying to get New Japan shows in their country.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia is paying billions of dollars.
If they only had a TV deal, you know, you'd be singing a different tune here.
I don't think so.
It's hard to, you know.
Then get a TV deal. You got Mark Cuban in your corner.
I know, but you know how hard it would be to broadcast live from Japan? The time is different, dude.
So move to America.
You know, I'm not staying up to 3 o'clock in the morning to watch fucking New Japan.
Neither am I. But people do that every day, every week for Raw.
What do you mean? Raw starts at 7 o'clock Central Time over here.
First of all, it's 8 p.m. Freedom Time.
Shut the fuck up.
Second of all, I'm saying, ask Callum what time he's up for Raw.
You know, Callum is usually up at these times for anything. You know, ask Callum on a Wednesday what he's doing at 1 a.m. and he's, I'm just up.
Yeah,
so
but I'm
we
saying
really can't use Callum.
In there's this people one. That stay up to watch this stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Now. Okay. But don't use Callum because Callum is always up for no reason. Sometimes I'll see him on online on Messenger and I'll message him like, "What you doing, bro?" And he's like, "Nothing." I kind of get it, man, but at the same time I think that it's really all about perspective, and WWE is the biggest company at the moment. I think that nobody is stopping Vince. I don't think anybody can stop Vince. Vince is running a monopoly of professional wrestling at the moment, and nobody can come to touching him right now. If TV deals and if New Japan wasn't based in Japan, and it would have had its time to, you know, to flourish more and try to make itself a competition, I think we would be singing a different song here.
All right, let's move on to music as we're approaching that 1 hour mark.
Yeah.
Let's talk about music.
Yeah.
What do you like?
It's gonna be funny, man. I've grown over the years. My music taste has grown a lot over the years, you know. I love early 2000s. That's what I listened to in my youth, you know, mostly the early 2000s. And then once I approached my years, I was really into metal. And I loved metal up until my 19, 18 years old, where I started to get into, you know, pop punk and really enjoy that and grew out of that. I had a little indie phase actually around 19 to 20. Yeah, because 18 to 19 was pop punk, 19 to 20 was a little indie phase. And then now I just started to listen to more rap, movie soundtracks, old 90s and 2000s jams, 80s, and just really about anything I can get my hands on. Also, like, you know, corridos, ranchera, cumbias and stuff, you know, Mexican, not Mexican music, more like Latin stuff. You know, one of my favorite genres right now is Latin trap. There's a big movement going on in Latin America with trap music. So, you know, it's great. You know, artists like Bad Bunny, J Balvin, Nicky Jam, all these artists are making a huge come up because there's a big movement growing right now in Latin America, which I believe we haven't even seen its prime yet. And it's amazing. You know, it's a very distinct sound with that Latin flavor to it, and it's great, man.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a
great sound. I mean, if people enjoy K-pop, bro, I think you can enjoy Latin trap.
Give me your top five rappers list all time. Oh, man.
Okay, all time. Number one, of course, it is to me who is the greatest at the moment. I think he might just be one of the greatest of all time. Kendrick Lamar, bro. There's no way that anybody else tops him lyrically. Every time that Kendrick comes up with an album, everybody's eye is on it. You know, say what you will, you know, because I know John doesn't like Kendrick, finds him a little bit corny. And I'm like, well, it doesn't really matter because, you know, when he releases that album, people pay attention. Drake, you know, Drake is on a whole nother level, man. Drake is the best artist at the moment, man. Like, he transcends hip hop and rap. You know, he is really making moves out there. P.S. If Drake ever stumbles upon this podcast, release the song with Bad Bunny, bro. Come on. Been waiting for it. I'm dying to hear it. Then we have the immortal, you know, Kanye. Kanye will always be up there in contention. Jay-Z, number four. And then number five. Damn, you got me in a pickle here now. Got me cornered. Got me cornered from my life here, man. I'm trying to see anything else that really comes into contention. Because really, after all those, really, who else is there to put in there? Notorious B.I.G. Biggie Smalls.
I hate your list, just so you know.
That's why it's my opinion, goddammit.
Alright, so here's the thing. So, who was your first one? Kendrick? I'm with it. Cool. The next four, I ain't with it. Drake is my favorite rapper of all time. He cannot be considered the greatest rapper of all time because he doesn't write it all his own lyrics. Right there.
That's Boom. Why I said he's the greatest artist right now.
I know. You're correct. But you just gave me your top five greatest list and you hit me with Drake. And then you followed up with Kanye.
Yeah.
And then you followed up with Jay-Z.
Yeah.
And then Biggie.
What's wrong with that?
All of them have been accused of stealing bars or having ghostwriters.
Wow. Okay.
But keep going. Let me keep going. I feel like Biggie gets hyped up because he was killed in his prime.
Okay. I think I can say that for Tupac, Biggie.
You say you can say that for Tupac, but not Biggie?
Yeah.
Biggie's good. He's not the best. My top five is, I have three people tied for first place, but it's still only five people. So to me, the greatest of all times are Kendrick Lamar, Eminem, and Nas. You said what? Raul, you there?
I forgot to put Nas in there.
Yeah. And then after that, the four and five spots go to number four is Andre 3000. Mm. And number five is Jordan Lucas.
Uh, I will say,
What's wrong with Jordan Lucas?
I think it's too early to put him in contention.
Have you heard his music?
I have. It's nothing too surprising to me.
That's crazy. His storytelling ability is like better than anybody's, in my opinion.
I was gonna say though, shout out to Callum. I will put Brockhampton up in there, so as one of my favorite artists at the moment. Yeah, Brockhampton is really good. So if you've known, listen to Brockhampton, I think you need to give him a shot.
I think they're personally weird.
I like weird.
They remind me of Odd Future, but not as good.
Where you can get that from, but I don't I think they're actually better than Odd Future, but hey, that's your opinion. What can I say?
All right, so
I respect it.
Let's get controversial. Is Bad Baby a good rapper or no?
Bad Baby?
Yes.
God, though.
What?
She doesn't even come. She doesn't
Gucci
even
flip
come
flops is a bop.
Bro, she doesn't even. Look, you know. If I, no.
I'm not saying she's the greatest. I'm saying she's good.
No, she's not good. If we're talking like good little kid rappers, Lil Romeo, bro, come on.
Nah, she'll eat Lil Romeo and Lil Bow Wow alive.
Nah, man.
Gucci flip flops is a bop. That's a banger right there.
It's cross too, man. Come on.
Nah, you're wildin' right now.
Bad baby is really what happens when you put a bad behaved girl on Dr. Phil and tell her and make her an internet meme which gives her money. You know, I get
I'm
it.
I'm not hating
it's
her
a,
hustle.
No, I'm not gonna hate on the hustle either because you know she's an opportunist. She really is, and she took advantage of what she was of the opportunity that she had in front of her, which I commend her for that because. Not many people are able to see an honor opportunity in front of them and actually run with it, which I'm going to have to repeat it again. If you haven't executed on your dreams yet, I don't know what the fuck you're waiting for. I think you should do it.
Yeah, bitches.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, Bad Baby did that, but I mean, like, bars. I guess flow. I think she does have a good flow. Not going to lie.
She low-key has bars, too. Hold on, let me. You keep talking, and I'm going to look up these lyrics real quick.
Bars? I don't even think I can tell you you have bars. I think more more congratulations to her producer because that person makes really good beats. Go ahead and bring me Exhibit A to the table, sir. Give me some quote unquote bars from Bad Baby.
Hold on.
I don't know how much more I can talk about before you give me the bars. Okay.
This a big watch, diamonds dripping off the clock. That's a double entendre. Like she's making money. She's making money even when she's not on the clock. Like even when she's not trying to, she's making money. But literally, it's a big watch, and she's got diamonds on her clock, like the watch.
Dude, I can't give you exact artists who said that, but how many of the I pretty much the same shit has been told better by different artists. I can't give you the exact ones at the moment.
That's all rap though. Like almost everything is recycled at this point.
I just don't see it, man. I don't think she's good. But hey, you know, whatever makes the money.
Hold on, I'm trying to read these lyrics real quick.
All right. Now you just bring me Exhibit B now. Gotta give me something better than what the fuck. Anytime now, Travis.
Hold on. I don't know her music that well. I mean, I just think she's good.
You know how you just contradict yourself there? You're like, I don't know her music well, but I think she's good.
No, I mean, but like what I've heard of her is good. I just don't remember the names of the songs.
I think her first one was These Hoes. But
These Hoes, that is, yeah.
H-E-A-U-X.
Yeah.
That's a clever title, actually.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
I mean, but there's nothing really big to be putting. I can't say, hey, you're the greatest of all. You're greatest. You're a really good rapper because you have a really good title. Like, you know, what's it called? Who has some really young, you know, Yachty is pretty good to me. He's okay, but I wouldn't say he's good. But he does have clever titles. But just because he has clever titles, I wouldn't say, damn, yo, Yachty's really good and shit.
Fuck you, Errol.
Cute. Year old man talking about this girl, you know. But I appreciate her hustle, you know.
You say I'm an old man?
No, I said that I sound like a bitter old man. Oh. Talking about this. You know, I appreciate her hustle. I just don't find her music good.
All right, after rereading these lyrics, she probably doesn't have bars, but she's still pretty decent. I still like the flow and all that.
She does have good flow.
I will give you that she doesn't have bars.
Yeah. I will give you that. You know, she does have a good flow, but bars? Nah. I appreciate Cardi B too, what she's doing, man.
You think Cardi B got bars?
No, she don't got bars, but you know she makes some pretty catchy stuff. That song with J Balvin and Bad Bunny is really good. Especially look, if I can't convince you on Land Trap, bro, let me read. You know, can I translate you these lyrics from that verse and that song?
Yeah.
All right. Here, I got you. I'm just picking it up. Because these are clever bars. You know, in Spanish they sound better, but if I'm gonna translate it for you here, man. So you know, Cardi's verse is like okay, but really, Bad Bunny's is really, really good. So, what's it called? Chambean, chambean, pero no jalan. That's really, you know, y'all work and work, but are you really working? So, tú compras todas las Jordan, pero a mí me la regalan. So, you know, you buy all the Jordan, but they're giving me that. You know, they're giving it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I spend in the club what you have in the bank. This is the new religion bang. It's Latino gang. I try to do a diet, but I have way too much grease in my closet. Ya mudé la Gucci pa dentro de la casa. Cabrona, tiene y te conocen en plaza. Okay, so I moved in all my Gucci into my house, but they don't even know you out in the streets. The devil's always calling me, but Jesus Christ is always hugging me. I'm a warrior like Eddie, a guerrero like Eddie, que viva la raza. That's a Eddie Guerrero reference right there.
Right.
Love, and then he just does my favorite parts here. I love Puerto Ricans. I love Cubans. I love the accents of Colombians. The Dominican shake her ass, but the only one I'm gonna fuck is the Venezuelan. I don't know. That's actually, this next line is just Puerto Rican slang. I can't really say what that means because I don't know what it means. I've got hundreds of dollar bills in my luggage. Damn. I can't. This is all really Puerto Rican slang. I don't know what it means. This next line either. No, I can't. This is all Puerto Rican slang. Actually, I can't. These next lines, I can't. I don't know what they mean. But it's like, what's it called? He's really good. If you listen to like, if you know Spanish, you'll know that like, he's got bars, hella bars, like a lot of bars. But it's just really hard to translate him, especially because he uses a lot of slang from Puerto Rico, so it's really hard to translate that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, Cardi does. There was something about Cardi that made her really popular, and made her be money wise up there with Lauryn Hill, you know.
Right,
I'm not saying that she's better than Lauryn Hill, because she's not. No, Lauryn Hill is the best female rapper of all time to me. It's really hard for you to touch Lauryn Hill. But money-wise, she made it up there. So there is something that she's giving that people are enjoying. Yeah. By the way, I think I don't really care about the whole Nicki and Cardi beef. I just think that Nicki's been running her mouth so much that I'm glad that somebody finally said, you know what, I'm going to stand up this time.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. What was I going to say to you? Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Let's go. Do you want to talk about these two recent beefs?
Yeah.
So Eminem and MGK, and then Pusha T and Drake.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get the one that I care about least. The least.
Okay.
MGK and Eminem. I think it's stupid, bro. Like I really don't care about these two rappers. I thought it was funny that they came at each other. But I do understand Eminem's reason to come at him was because, you know, MGK had said something about Haley. So as a father, you know, you're going to defend your daughter's honor, of course, you know. But I really could give less than a shit about whatever the fuck this beef is producing. Do you have anything to say about that beef?
I think MGK won.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, the minute that Eminem decided to respond to a low-level rapper like MGK, I think he won.
I think MGK, I mean, even not even with that, I think MGK just had a better diss. He had a better, it was a better song. The stuff that he said was more, had more bass in terms of, like, who knows if it's true or not, but Eminem tried to blackball him. Stuff like that, like, it actually makes sense. Yeah. Where...
How many times do we have to hear that, you know, everybody goes wild over that line, but it's the most generic diss to a up-and-coming rapper. You know, this is your moment. I'm making your career, so do with it what you got. You know, whatever he said, basically in those words, right? It's the most generic diss you can give in an up-and-coming rapper.
Right. I had to give you a career before I could end it, is what he says.
Yeah. Like, this is the most generic diss you can ever give an up-and-coming rapper.
Yeah, I agree with that. Other than that, I mean, it wasn't as great as I was hoping it would be, but same can be said for the other one that we're going to talk about. But who do you think you have with that?
Oh, Pusha won. The moment his motherfucker said that Drake had a kid and none of us knew that shit, bro. I am telling you right now, the man had to bring up a kid having a son that we never knew, and he did not respond after that. Pusha won 100%. Anybody who says that Pusha didn't win is an idiot. Like, you guys are so wrong.
I agree.
you know, the songs were okay, but I just think that track of the story of Adonis, dude, the man brought up a kid. I mean, really, how hard do you have to go now?
Yeah, it's just...
Good.
Good. It's just... It's crazy. He went against everything. He hit his mom, his women, his kid, his dad, his best friend who's dying. Like, yeah. It was disrespectful. Yeah,
we have Ether, and then we have the story of Adonis, man. Like, the man brought up, I'm sorry if I'm going to keep going back to this, but Pusha brought up the fact that this man is a kid who he's not taking care of. I mean, as in, like, what it looks like, you know, which we could be wrong and Drake could be taking care of this kid. It's just that, you know, we don't see it on the internet and stuff like that. But 100% Pusha won, man. He took his first L. Drake took his first L.
I definitely agree with you. Yeah. I didn't even think it was possible for Drake to take an L.
Me neither. Yeah, because, you know, he was coming off a big win from him burying Meek Mill. Like, I mean, we thought that was how big it was going to get with a rapper with a diss, you know, playing freaking memes at a concert of Meek Mill.
Right.
And then this, dude. And I'm like, holy shit. Plus the whole picture he had as the cover art, which made Drake respond to that, but he couldn't respond to the song. That really shows you something, man.
I agree. That was crazy.
God, man.
Yeah, the cover art was ridiculous because of the what it implied.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. You know, and he had to give context on it, and you know, like,
yeah.
There was going to be some serious implications if it wasn't what we thought it was. If it was what we thought it was going to be some serious implications on Drake, which, you know, I can't say it would have made a big dent in his career, but it would be a big dent in the way we look at Drake. So
I agree.
He made him speak on that. But the fact that he couldn't respond to the song, that really shows you who won there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. I'm probably going to play that song after now.
it's just crazy. Anything else you want to talk about?
Not really, man. I think we're at the one hour mark.
It's about 1 hour and 10 minutes, so just about the same time.
Yeah. All right. So I guess we'll just end it here. You want me to give out my closing statements?
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead and plug your stuff again.
All right. You know, before I actually plug myself, I kind of want to just speak to the masses here. So thank you. I want to thank Travis so much for having me on here. You know, this is the first podcast I do outside of what I do on my own company, and really, really grateful. I'm glad that I was actually the first one on Travis, because I know if it wouldn't have been me, you would have taken a little bit more time to make this. And I think I need to tell everybody out there, you know, if you have a podcast in mind, stop delaying it. Stop trying to overthink this shit. I think it's too much to fall into the whole thinking stage of it all. Just saying, I want to talk about this. Let's record it, put it up. I think the resources are there for you to make a podcast. I'll say this as well, because I've been thinking about it. For everybody who on the internet who's constantly, you know, venting out their frustrations, and you know, I think you can make a podcast and grind that shit out and vent your frustrations about this world and everything that you're living in. Make some money off that, because you can grow your own platform now. We're in the century and we're in the time where it is the best time to be making a business at the moment, because we've seen a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of self-starters. I think if you haven't started working on something that you love, I think you're not giving it enough time to really unravel itself and make itself organic. I think you need to get off your ass and get to work on some stuff, because you have the power to do something great, and I don't know what's stopping you from doing it. And if it's your own if it's your own insecurities, then I hope you realize that you are very talented, and I hope that you know that you can do something like this, like Travis and I are making. So get off your ass, get Anchor, write out a podcast episode, record episode one, upload it to Anchor, and then from there, upload every week, be consistent, and watch yourself grow, because you deserve it. You owe it to yourself to talk about what you love. As always, you can go and check my stuff out on YouTube, Raul Alejandro Mendoza, that's my channel. Check out my podcast, Nerdcore, on all podcast platforms. Also, if you want, go to my Patreon. Our Patreon for Nerdcore, look at a tier that you might enjoy to pledge to, and you get extra content at www.patreon.com/nerdcore. Follow me on Twitter at the Nerdy Chicano, and on Instagram as well as the Nerdy Chicano. Other than that, I think that's it. Thank you for having me, Travis.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Mm-hmm. If you guys have anybody that you feel is interesting, or you're interesting yourself and you want to come on the podcast, just message me on Facebook, Travis Trimble, TravisTrimble. I'm always looking for new episodes, new people to talk to. I just do this to have fun. So,
yeah.
Hit me up. All right. We can get out of here, guys.
Do what you love, people. And also, Shrek 2 is the greatest movie of all time. Let's end it there.
This is Travis Trimble signing off.